With Jimmy Hyams, I'm John Wilkerson. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program a longtime friend, happy to say that, and a longtime friend of Sports Talk, Chris Lowe of ESPN. Chris, how are you?
John, I'm outstanding. It's good to be with you guys.
Chris, a great job on the story about Lane Kiffin in Tennessee 10 years ago, and I've got to think you probably had a lot of fun writing that, talking to Lane Kiffin, Monty Kiffin, Lance Thompson, and Mike Hamilton, and many others, and putting that story together.
Yeah, and for three guys that were here then, can you guys believe it's been 10 years ago?
No.
Doesn't that just blow you away?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, it was a lot of fun. The best is I got to go back down to Boca Raton for a couple of days. That's always good. I always kid Lane, I just need you to say more controversial or stupid things so it gives me a reason to come down here, spend some time and do a story on you.
I got a kick
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I got a kick out of the part where Lane Kiffin said a lot of the things that he did was because he grew up and listened to what Steve Spurrier said. So he wanted to emulate some of that. And then Spurrier said, oh, don't blame me about that. I didn't say some of those things he was saying.
don't put that on me. It was a lot of fun. Talking to Spurrier and Monty and spending some time down there with Monty and Lane, Lance Thompson. That was a terrific staff, guys. Think about I think five or six guys on that staff have either now been head coaches or head coaches now or a coordinator somewhere. You know, Chaney's back at Tennessee. Eddie Grant, the offensive coordinator at Kentucky. Certainly Ogeron's a head coach at LSU. Frank Wilson, I think, still at UT, San Antonio?
Yes.
You go on and on. Monty was the defensive coordinator. But there were so many guys on that staff that not only were good coaches but were outstanding recruiters. And the class that they had coming in, you know, you can think about some of those guys in that class. Juwan James still playing in the NFL. I enjoyed doing it, and it's funny how a fan base, and even those of us in the media, because, you know, Lane and I weren't the chummiest of we didn't have the chummiest relationships when he was at Tennessee in 09. I went after him pretty good. I don't think he was really fond of me or that, but to his credit, over the years, you know, we've gotten along a lot better, and I think he's been one of those guys I think that has evolved a little bit. But the fan base, I mean, think about it, Jimmy, during the coach search this last year. I mean, I don't know about you guys, how many calls you got on your show or just out and about town. I heard all the time, well, why don't they talk to Lane Kiffin? Why don't they talk about bringing Lane back? I mean, who would have thought that 10 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, especially after the burning of the mattresses. Alshon Jeffrey, I wanted to ask you about that as well, because at that time, and I think you reported it about it being said that if Alshon Jeffrey stays in state, goes to South Carolina, he'd be pumping gas for the rest of his life. I think Kiffin acknowledged to you that it was said, it just wasn't him that said it, but he wouldn't say who on the staff said it, right?
They were here's the scene. They were all sitting around a speakerphone the night before. Alshon's coach had taken him to a hotel the night before signing day to quote unquote get him away. Well, he had USC, South Carolina, and Tennessee all trying to get him right down to the last minute, and they're all talking to him, you know, at all hours of the night. And so a bunch of the Tennessee coaches are sitting around a speakerphone talking to Alshon and his coach. And when I wrote the story, Alshon and his coach said that, you know, right in the middle of it, it was Lane that said, you know, if you stay in state, go to South Carolina, you're going to pump the gas for the rest of your life. And at the time, Lane denied, no, I did not say that. That's not true. I didn't say that. He still is adamant that he didn't say it, but he does admit that he did hear it said. But in his words, I'm not going to throw anybody on my staff under the bus.
Chris, as you were putting this together, as Jimmy mentioned, of all the guys that you spoke with, how impressive is it that 10 years later, that so many of the stories are obviously right there front of consciousness?
John, that's a great question. You know what stuck out to me the most about this story? And I think as media members that are close to a story sometimes and to a school, we lose sight of this. Those kids love playing for Lane.
Mm-hmm.
I challenge you guys to go find somebody on that team, and then maybe there's a couple that just didn't have a blast playing for the guy. And I don't care whether it was defense, whether it was offense. I mean, I talked to a ton of guys, you know, from Jonathan Crompton, to Monterio Hardesty, Wes Brown, Chris Walker, Marlon Walls. Those guys raved about how much fun they had, how much better that he made them. And Chris told me, he says, you would just sit and watch tape with Lane. He said, you felt like you grew exponentially as a football player every time you sat and watched tape with him. Of course, Chris was a defensive player. But that's the thing that jumped out to me is those guys really had a ball playing for the guy. And they knew he was unconventional. They knew he was a little bit out there. Hey, think about this. He was 33 when he got the job. So he's only about, in some cases, 10 or 11 years older than some of the oldest kids on that team.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there was a connection. He related well. But they all, to a man, said that they just absolutely love playing for him. They love Monty. And you're right, John. The stories that they told was almost like they were recounting something that happened yesterday.
There are so many things that stand out, and Tennessee did have a really solid win. Just kind of took South Carolina, took care of South Carolina in the black jerseys, but they were so close to huge wins, and I don't think since that really wasn't the expectation of that season. What do you think it meant to the team? Now, granted, they weren't competitive in every game they lost, but still, they were so close in so many of the games they wound up losing. What do you think it meant for them to have that kind of shot just for getting out there and just playing hard?
Well, they saw the future, and all of them said that. You know, all the kids I talked to, that they saw, hey, all right, we got a guy now here who's going to go toe-to-toe with Urban Meyer, go toe-to-toe with Steve Spurrier. You know, yeah, he can coach. He's a brilliant offensive mind. He's going to bring in great players. And it translated onto the field. They played two number one teams that year. Remember, Florida was ranked number one, and Alabama was ranked number one. And had Alabama ranked there on the ropes, you know, if the field goal doesn't get blocked.
Mm-hmm.
I think they saw into the future. They saw hope. And I think that's why most of them were so upset when he left. And you're right. They were very competitive. They won four of their last five games to end the regular season. They lost a tough game at home early to UCLA, which Lane still, and I think of all the games he lost that year, Lane kicks himself the most over that one because he said his play calling there at the end wasn't very good. But they were right, John. They were on the cusp of being a 8-9-10 win team with a team that had not had a winning season the year before. And I don't think it's any coincidence that when Lane was brought in as coach, he was so diametrically opposite from Philip Fulmer, you know, who was pushed out the year before, whether you agree with it or don't agree with it. And I think the players all love Fulmer. And everybody I talked to, nobody had one bad thing to really say about Coach Fulmer, but they just knew that Lane was this sort of different cat, if you will, and went about it a different way. And they bought in immediately into the way he went about it.
I guess Chris Lowe, ESPN. Chris, one of the things, there were a couple of things that struck me, but what Jonathan Crompton said, he talked about how the coaching staff instilled a confidence in them to make them believe they could play with anybody, and he also said that he wished he could have had more time with Lane Kiffin, that he helped develop a lot of players that weren't developed previously, and that's a fact. That's that underscores good coaching, doesn't it?
Well, and it does. And look at, I mean, guys like Dan Williams. Dan Williams went on to be a first-round draft pick, you know, and I don't know how much he did before that year, you know, with Monty and Ed Ogeron. And, of course, we know Crompton. Crompton, let's be honest, he was a bad quarterback. He was a bad quarterback before that year. And Jonathan will tell you that. And Lane made him believe. Jim Chaney gets a lot of credit there. Jonathan's been outspoken before. That's not the first time he said stuff like that. You know, he felt like that he wasn't developed and maybe didn't get the shot that he deserved. We're probably all in our lives believe that about a boss or a coach. But no, he blossomed. I mean, he played great football that year. Here's another story that I didn't get into. This is a great one. You guys remember John Painter. John was the SID there, now at Colgate. Lane was getting ready to do the teleconference, the coach's teleconference. Now, I don't know if they did it on Tuesday or Wednesday of the week. And he walks in there with John Painter. And he says, John, I'm going to spice this thing up a little bit. We're going to change it up. You see, this teleconference is boring. I'm going to go on. What would you think if I go in here and predict and guarantee that we're going to beat Georgia? We're going to beat them badly. And not only that, but Jonathan Crompton is going to be the SEC player of the week. And John Painter looked at him and said, well, Coach, you know, you do what you want to. But, you know, I don't know about that. Of course, he didn't say it, but both of those things came true. They throttled Georgia. and Crompton had the game of his life and was named SEC Player of the Week. But that's the kind of thing, and Painter said this, he said, Chris, he was always doing things like that with a team. He knew the right buttons to push, and boy, they responded.
Well, they almost beat Alabama. What was interesting was that they knew Daniel Lincoln had an injury, and yet, though they thought he probably wouldn't make that field goal, Kiffin said he got a kick out of looking over at the other sideline and seeing the face of Nick Saban.
You know, for somebody, you know, Lane loved to poke. You've been around him. He loves to poke everybody. He pokes mm-hmm. me. He's an equal, as I tell him, you're an equal opportunity Twitter troll is what you are. I mean, you go after everybody. And he sort of, you know, sheepishly laughs and say, yeah, you're right. But he loved to go after, you know, whether it was Saban, whether it was, you know, Spurrier, Meyer, everybody. I mean, think about all the Hall of Fame coaches or future Hall of Fame coaches that were in the league when he got there. I mean, you could conservatively say there were probably four, right?
Yes.
Spurrier already is. I mean, you got Urban's going to be, Saban's going to be. I guess Les Miles has a chance to be, right? And he felt like it was up to him to sort of turn up the heat a little bit and give Tennessee's players and fan base a reason to do that. But yeah, that's vintage Lane. Lance said he walked by Lane and he says, "Yeah, it's going to be a tough kick for him to make." But look across the field. Look at Coach. Look at Saban. Look on his face. That itself's worth it. And then not only that, he walks up to him after the game and says, "Well, that's okay. That's the last time that's going to happen." And of course. The last time he coached against him as a head coach. And I won't say exactly what Lane said. He said, but like a dumb, you know what? Little did I know I was going to need a job from the guy in five more years.
Do you think that in the future, Lane Kiffin will be a coach in the SEC again?
He'll have a chance. He's got, you know, they didn't have a good year last year. Had mm-hmm. a great year his first year. They won more games as an FBS program than FAU had ever had. And I was down there with him for a week. He did an excellent job with that team. They need to win some more games this year, and I think they will in their conference, John. But let me say this, having talked with Lane now at length about these kind of things, I don't think he's looking to leave just to go somewhere. He really loves living in Boca Raton. He's got a great place there on Intercoastal Waterway. He's got a boat. He goes fishing. The people there have been great to him. He loves his president. If it's a Power 5 SEC, upper-tier SEC-type job, put it this way. Had Tennessee called last year during that marathon coach search that kept Jimmy up to 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning every night.
He
certainly would have listened and certainly would have been interested. But they weren't going to. John Curry wasn't going to hire him, nor was Philip Fulmer going to hire him. But if a job like that came available, that he felt like he could come back in at a top-tier Power 5 job and win, yeah, absolutely. But I still think he's probably got to prove it a little bit more. He's got to be a little bit more body of work there at FAU and win a few more games. And you know, he's always going to be on Twitter speaking his mind, but maybe not be so controversial that he scares all the presidents away.
Good point.
That may be his biggest challenge.
Chris, it was a great piece. Really enjoyed it. Folks need to take a read of that Chris Lowe's article about Tennessee in 2009 under Lane Kiffin. Chris, thank you so much for joining us.
It's always great catching up with you guys. Have a great day.
All right. Chris. We'll look forward to the nation this weekend.
Yep. Chris Lowe with ESPN.
And as you heard, he is your host with The Nation with Austin Price each Sunday from 6 until 7, which you can hear right here on FM 99.1, The Sports Animal.